All right, good evening. So welcome. So the hindrance of restlessness and worry. Just reflecting on the hindrances themselves, and it's such an essential part of our subjective experience as meditators, that we sit to meditate and these different qualities of mind, of body, move through us. Sometimes we're lost in craving, sometimes struggling with what we're adverse to, sometimes falling asleep, sometimes it's restlessness and worry, sometimes doubt. We often take that as there's something wrong with me as the meditator. If I was a better meditator, I wouldn't be having this. I wouldn't be sleepy. I wouldn't be restless. I wouldn't feel this sense of craving or aversion. You know, and so we struggle with it. We try to get rid of these hindrances. We think there's something wrong with me. I need to do more of this, less of that. And I like to reframe the hindrances actually as this very beautiful invitation to meet our moment's experience, to really meet ourselves in this moment, to meet the Dharma in this moment. Now, focusing on this one hindrance of restlessness and worry, it becomes this invitation toward compassion. You know, to compassion toward what are we having this restlessness arising with? What is the worry mind around? Also reflecting that the hindrances often don't just travel by themselves. That we often have multiple hindrances operating at one point. We may feel the sense of aversion. And because we're trying to be a good meditator, we get really restless because we can't just do the natural thing and get up and stretch our legs. Right? So there's that quality of restlessness added on to the primary thing of aversion. Now, restlessness and worry have these two components. There's a physical component in the body, and there's the mental, emotional quality of worry. And they're paired together, it can be really helpful to explore and to look at. And holding this sense of compassion as we explore this tonight. Now, physical quality of restlessness, it can be just a sense we can't sit still, we can't find a place of being at rest. Sometimes our bodies are hurting, our bodies aren't aligned right, sometimes our bodies aren't used to this position. Sometimes we have injuries that cause all these qualities of restlessness. But it's also interesting that restlessness can just arise on its own accord, almost like it's like a welding up from the cells of the body, an untying of energetic knots. And sometimes you're sitting and it's feeling very calm, very centered, and then your body just starts to feel this vibration, this quality of energy going through it. And especially if there's a quality of calmness with it, letting that just go through the system. Opening it up, letting it move as easily through you with as little resistance can be really helpful. Of course, sometimes it gets really uncomfortable, like there's ants crawling on the skin or a sense of you just can't quite sit still. Sometimes there's a lot of pressure that comes with restlessness. And in my own experience, my own practice, kind of checking to see, is there a sense of striving or a sense of shoulding that I'm bringing into the meditation. You know, I should be this certain way, I should be still, I shouldn't move my leg. And I remember in my early retreat days trying to not move at all, which is, you know, generally a good guidance, but having a lot of leg pain in retreats and not wanting to move with that, but trying to relax with it. And in that effort to relax, there's really hidden a quality of striving with that. So there's this level of tension that would start to build around that. And that showed up as this kind of whole body energetic restlessness. You know, I'd be sitting still, but just inside I felt like I was about to explode with the energy. So sometimes just checking to see how much tension, how much striving am I bringing in to the practice in this moment. And perhaps there's a quality of easing that, relaxing with that. Asking, what am I imposing on myself? What am I imposing on the meditation? What expectation might I have? Sometimes this kind of physical restlessness, especially when our practice is deepening, It almost feels like there's this guardian at this gate, the spiritual gate that's holding this restlessness at us. And we can just relax through it. If we can just get through that restlessness, then something magical will happen. And there's that sense of, okay, I got to bear with this, open to this. And often checking that quality of striving, of agenda, of wanting things to be a certain way, wanting to attain something, to have a realization and insight. And often when we finally release that sense of wanting, that's when the restlessness falls away. And paradoxically, that's when the gates open. So other times, restlessness can just simply be we're a little frayed at the edges, that we're overworked, overcommitted, underslept, under-resourced. You know, we're really extending ourselves beyond our normal capacity. So we get this quality of irritability, that quality of restlessness. That's where the compassion comes in, to see really what is needed in this system. You know, sometimes there is more of a need to have rest, have calmness, have a rebalancing. And the restlessness is this denial of our basic needs. So restlessness from the physical component, and then going into the emotional part, this is more the worry aspect and a more enhanced quality of anxiety, which is so much of a prevalent problem in our society. You know, on retreats, when I teach retreats, we ask people to fill out these interview sheets so we get a sense of their practice and what they might be struggling with, where their, you know, what their history is with practice. And often people talk about anxiety, depression and anxiety as very common issues that we have, that we bring into the meditation to try to work with. And this is really tied to how convincing our thoughts are, how much we believe in what our mind thinks, you know, the strength of that. And especially with worry, when we worry about often very significant things in our lives, our health, the health of our loved ones, the health of the planet, the health of you know, all these different areas, the quality of what might happen. And it can have a very real quality to it. And there's a distinction between discernment of what's to be concerned about, how to act from it, versus what is worry. And what do we add in this quality of papancha? So papancha is this really fun Pali word, which means proliferation of thought. And with worry, we see that. We have this one thought of concern that may be very valid. And we quickly make this whole world around it, this whole world of worst-case scenarios. And we quickly realize it's almost endless how much bad things can happen. And it has a very gripping quality. It's like it really sucks us into it. It's like a black hole in terms of its gravity field. We become very connected to it, have no sense of escape or safety or a sense of spaciousness around it. And again, these have very personal meanings and a very personal pain connected with it. One of the analogies that the Buddha used that Tori talked about in the first talk in this month's topic was slavery. That when we're caught in worry and restlessness, it's like being enslaved. That we don't have the freedom of where to go. We're constrained by someone else who's controlling us. And when worry takes hold, it's like our whole world focuses in around this. You know, reflecting the last time you're caught in a very strong worry cycle, how easy was it to turn that off? You know, you can't get to sleep because your mind keeps going endlessly when that argument keeps going over and over again. You know, what will the future bring? You can't just turn it off. That's that quality of being enslaved to that. So learning how to release that grip, I'm going to explore that a little bit. Now often when I do Dharma talks, and because of my own practice inclination, I often focus on embodiment and investigation as tools to explore. So quality of feeling something in the body, and then using investigation to see, where's this sense of identification? Where's this sense of of clinging, of holding into this topic. But tonight I'd like to focus a little differently around it, and actually working with the thinking mind itself. Because worry is very much tied to our thoughts, our belief in thoughts. So when we have this quality of worry arising, this hindrance of worry, it can be very helpful to be more accurate, more precise with what exactly am I worried about. Because sometimes it becomes very amorphous. It's just this field of worry that we latch different things onto. Like a train of thought, we have a thought of worry this way, then it turns a corner this way and that way. So there's a kind of sense of coming down to what's really the core sense of this worry. What's the worry under the worry? You know, I might be worried about the welfare of my teenage daughter. But what's underneath that worry? You know, there's a sense of grief, of loss, perhaps. Is there a sense of fear, of loss, of being out of control? You know, why is this a subject of worry? Why is my mind so caught in it? Now, this is a little bit of a trick or a sleight of hand that we have to do, because what we focus on from a worry perspective is fairly superficial. I don't mean that as a way to discount the very real circumstances of our lives, but there's a superficial details that we tend to stay caught in. This cycle of thinking about X, Y, and Z, and we think about Y, Z, and X, and we just keep going over and over and over again. We can learn to see, hold that and suspend that belief in that and go down to a little bit deeper. What's the deeper pull, the deeper impulse? Often when we might explore what we're worried about, we focus on the details of our life. If we just explain the details, of course it makes sense that you'd be worried about it. But there's this much deeper element, again going down this fundamental sense of control, of fear, loss. When we do this, if you're on the right track, it takes you out of the thinking world, out of the grip of thought, into the more raw quality of emotion, the rawness of that, the directness of that. And in that directness of it, there's a natural stillness, a natural quiet. Doesn't mean it's easier or goes away like a magical formula. But it's much more of you have a directness of, okay, this is really the core of this worry, and all this is trying to solve this. It's kind of the ironic thing is our worry is trying to alleviate pain. It's trying to solve this problem. But it's doing it in a very ineffective, inefficient way. As meditators, we have this tool of being able to connect much more directly through this present moment's experience. Learning to release the future, release the past, to see how is this showing up right here, right now. Really specifically, where is this showing up as a contraction in the body, as a tension in the body? So what is the worry under the worry? I'm going to just throw out different ways to explore it. So hopefully some of them will land with some of your experience. Another way to think about worry is to ask, what is the foundation of this worry? What is it built upon? How much fact is it really built upon? Is it built on a sense of guessing, anticipation, or is it having a quality of solidity around it? Am I worried about falling because I just saw 10 of you fall on the ice? Okay, then that's a more valid worry. But if I'm worried about something that's more amorphous that I may not have experienced, I'm using my imagination to create the worry. Right? So again, it's very alluring. It's really based in thought. That's how we condition ourselves to live. But sometimes just stepping back and using thought itself to say, how much of this is assumption? How much of this is guesswork? How solid is my information? I mean, since the internet has been more, a given tool, we have a physical ailment. I mean, how many of you have gone on the internet and looked up some ailment? And you see all the stuff it could be. And does that make you calmer? It's like, you may feel more relaxed. You say, oh my God, I didn't even think about all these other things I might be having, right? But, you know, we don't have the clinical training, we don't have the clinical experience to say, this doesn't really fit into you because you don't have these other elements. So we take this one piece, we have all this extra information. So even though it seems very reliable, it doesn't have a strong base. Another interesting question to ask yourself of worry, is this a habit? Is this a habit? Does this feel familiar that I like to plug in different things to worry about? And sometimes we have these patterns of wanting to worry or needing to worry to kind of keep life going. How often do I fall into this pattern? How often do I use worry as a way to navigate the world? And when you get a sense of that, it's really helpful to create a little bit of separation, a little bit of distance, or a little bit of objectivity around it. Often by just simply saying, oh, there's my mind going down that pattern. There's my mind going down this worry pattern of obsession. You know, if you can even name your worry, you know, have a humorous name that kind of brings a little bit of lightness to it. Because when you do that, you're no longer participating in the same way. You're no longer lost in the same way. And that's kind of the slavery part of worry, is that when we don't realize it's happening, we think that's the reality. There's no separation, there's no distance. That's really our whole world is defined by the worry. We have no freedom. We can recognize this pattern of mind, becoming aware of our minds. Ah, this is what's present. There's my worry mind. And then we suddenly have a choice of how much do we engage in that? How much do we follow that? And that's one of the great gifts of mindfulness. It gives that little bit of pause. This way we're talking about mindfulness with worry, you know, comes in the four foundations of mindfulness. Awareness of the mind itself, and also of the dharmas. And the hindrances are specifically named there. To start to be aware when the hindrance arises, as it invited us to do during the meditation, to start to notice restlessness and worry, how is it naturally arising? Perhaps that quality of repetitive thinking, that quality of a little bit of anxiety, that quality of needing to move, and say, ah, this is restlessness, this is worry. And then finally, a good question to ask is, what can I do about this object of worry? What can I do about it? How much influence do I have over this? There's a young friend, an 18-year-old, who was telling me about this book he had read, and the sense of a sphere of influence that often we kind of, like physically, if I reached over here, I can do this and stay really balanced. There's kind of maybe about 2 feet around, 3 feet around my body that I can stay in balance. If I try to reach over here, I go out of my balance point, right? You can see that visually. And so often when we get worried about something, we go outside of our sphere. I'm trying to change something back there at the registration desk or at the kitchen, and it's outside of where I can physically move. And this is, we can see this politically. There's these big things that we can't affect, you know, someone who is way out there on the other side of the country. But what we can do is we can affect the people right around us. I can have a conversation with Daniel and say, okay, Daniel, tell me about those political beliefs, and listen to his side of the story, and a sense of opening my heart to that. And by doing that, I start to become more and more balanced. And that actually paradoxically starts to expand. So often we get caught in worry about something that's so beyond our control, trying to find what control can I have in this moment. I think just this year, so my daughter is a freshman in high school. And, you know, for those of you who are parents, it's a little bit of a scary time. I mean, it's, as a parent, you always have new things to worry about. You know, it's like there's what's choking on a marble or to, you know, unplanned pregnancies to school shootings. So school shootings is one of the ones that really gets, you know, it's a really scary thing to consider. So one day there's this text that came out. This kid had this gun and was, you know, saying, I'm going to have fun at the school. And so this text, of course, triggered all of this response and a lot of fear, you know, within the whole community of the kids and the parents. And so how do you hold that as a parent myself? I worked with this. Is how do I hold this very real concern, but have enough discernment to see how much of a concern is it? How valid is this concern? Because I can become obsessed with the fear of it. I can go online and look at all the shootings and become more and more worried about it. Or I can come back into this simple state of, I don't know what tomorrow will bring. You know, I like to see, you know, many, many years of health for my child, but there's no guarantees of that. So coming into that reality of this moment, all I can control is this moment and how I'm meeting that. And the next moment may be horrific, it may be beautiful, and by learning to connect to this moment, that enables me to be best prepared for whatever may come in the future. Going into the worry around it isn't so helpful. You know, some skillful ideas, what do you do in this situation versus that situation? There's a little bit of that planning which can be helpful. That's where the discernment and the worry start to become very important to distinguish, to separate out. So restlessness and worry are such a prevalent part of our lives. And we think often that these just happen when we meditate. It's a meditation fault that I start to feel restless or worried or sleepy. But it's actually something that we feel throughout our lives, throughout every moment. You can start to notice, how am I relating to this moment? Is there a quality of hindrance also here? Instead of seeing it as something as an obstacle, something to overcome, see it as an invitation to look a little closer, to see if I can change how I'm relating to this moment. Can I bring a quality of compassion to this moment to meet what's truly here? All right, so let's just let those words settle for a moment, and then we'll move into this exercise. All right, so this exercise is going to be a little different from what you usually do in these discussion nights, so I hope it will be fruitful for you. And it's really trying to focus on this sense of the grip of worry and how strong that can be and how hard it can be to release that, and give one additional tool how to play with that, how to work with that. And I think a format of a dyad would be the most helpful. So if you would like to participate, finding yourself one other person, and if you like to pass, you're welcome just to sit and